Mention cloud computing, and many organizations still have visions of it raining money, with big savings to be had from the outset. The benefits are many, but sometimes the savings do not live up to expectations, especially over the long term. Is that a gray cloud for adoption? Not really. It's just a reminder that organizations must be extra vigilant in their due diligence in finding the right solutions and the right vendors for cloud computing. It's a reminder that you must pay close attention to the price and contracts in your cloud sourcing arrangements. But what should you be looking for? Hi, I'm Scott Smith, the host of Talking Technology, Gartner's monthly audio news magazine. And with me to answer that question and more is Alexa Bona. Alexa is a vice president for IT management research here at Gartner, and she joined me by phone from her office at Gartner's European headquarters in Egham, England. Our full conversation will appear on the May edition of Talking Technology, and you can find so much more information in the Cloud Sourcing Special Report, now on Gartner.com. Alexa, welcome. So how does cloud sourcing differ from traditional sourcing approaches?
That's a good question. I mean, maybe actually before I get into that, let me just take a few seconds just to define cloud, because that is often an issue that comes up when I'm speaking to sourcing executives about cloud and generally Gartner clients. Gartner defines cloud computing as a style of computing in which scalable and elastic IT-enabled capabilities are provided as a service to consumers using internet technologies. So just to quickly break that down, it's a model where the acquisition model is a service-based one, and the business model is a pay-for-use business model, and the access model is internet. And the technical model, to summarize it, is scalable, elastic, and shared. So that's just kind of to make sure that we're all on the same page there. But as you mentioned, the cloud sourcing model is absolutely different from traditional approaches. It's different from traditional on-premise software licensing and from traditional outsourcing approaches.
What are some of those differences?
It's different from the traditional on-premise because there are new elements that you have to consider related to risk. So elements like uptime, like performance, like privacy, security, liability for things like data loss. All of the things that would normally have been done internally by IT now would have to be contracted for in a cloud model. And it's also different from traditional outsourcing contracts, really, because it's much more one-to-many. It's not heavily customized and individual in its contracting approach. So the cloud business model itself is predicated on heavy standardization and heavy scale, absolutely from the technology side, but also from the contracting perspective. And the whole business model of cloud is that cloud providers can offer those lower price points, but they can't therefore afford to spend 9, 12, 15 months negotiating an individual contract with every single customer and then bearing all of the costs that would be inherent in managing all of those thousands of slightly different customized contracts. So the bottom line here is that cloud contracts are much less custom negotiated. There are many more standard terms. It's really much more of a take it or leave it approach, or at least that's the goal of it. Today, the model is still very nascent, and it's evolving. So the end goal would be these very standardized contracts. Today, what we see is that the contracts really are still provider-centric, I would argue too provider-centric, to the extent that a lot of the enterprises that we speak to just can't accept them as is, even at that price point. They recognize that the price point is low and that the contracts, therefore, aren't as flexible, but the actual standard terms in them are unacceptable. So we are seeing some levels of negotiation right now. But over time, we believe that these contracts will move to more of a middle ground, and then it really will be much more of a take it or leave it contracting mechanism. And we have seen examples of cloud providers already taking steps to move to this middle ground. So the bottom line of all of this is that cloud sourcing will really require a different approach, in my opinion. It will shift the sourcing paradigm completely so that rather than the traditional approach we see today, which is selecting a capability and assuming then that you can leave sourcing executives, IT procurement to sort out the commercials and negotiate the contract terms after, in the future, the contract will actually have to become part of the selection criteria on the basis that the terms are not something that you can just negotiate and fix and customize your requirements after the fact. So, yes, they are very different sourcing approaches to the ones that we know of and are familiar with today, both in the types of terms and conditions that are available and in the actual approach that you take to sourcing those capabilities.
So with the deals tending to be more provider-centric today, what's in it for the user organization? What are the benefits of cloud sourcing?
We've asked this question ourselves, not only within Gartner, but to our clients quite frequently and done some surveys. The things that come back from our clients most commonly would be faster time to market, because it's easier and quicker to deploy than traditional approaches. Rapid scale. So there are some businesses who are trying to grow very rapidly to meet market requirements, or who have sudden, maybe temporary peaks in business that are difficult to plan for and difficult to justify. From making a big CapEx outlay for a very small big peak is quite difficult. So rapid scale is one of the reasons why people look at this model and like it. Other times it's because it allows them to try out a solution, see if it works with relatively little financial commitment. From a financial perspective, it fits into an operational budget, so you can expense it. So there's no big CapEx approval process. And in fact, maybe I wouldn't be recommending this, but certainly I do speak to executives who like it because it allows them to bypass internal controls on things like procurement, maybe project planning, test and development. So it's not something that Gartner would necessarily recommend, but if I'm looking at it from a buyer perspective, that's a benefit. But the biggest benefit of all that I hear clients talk about is the perceived lower cost of ownership over traditional approaches. So the cost element comes up high in surveys.
Now, cost is so often listed as the big driver for cloud computing. So should we really be expecting big savings from the cloud?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think the answer is undoubtedly yes in the short term. So in the short term, when we look at the comparative costs, if you look at cloud-based industrialized models that are heavily scaled and heavily standardized, yes, we can see significantly lower initial costs. And I'm saying, 40, 50, 60% lower, significantly lower. But, and this is the big but, remember that this is a subscription model with annually recurring fees that are in the same range as the initial outlay, and sometimes, in fact, even higher. So it kind of might sound surprising that you would ever pay more than you started off, but the renewal prices for some of these deals I see escalating. And the reason for that is that the promise of cloud is that there is a lower switching cost than on-premise because you haven't had to invest in some of the underlying infrastructure, hardware, people, but there still are costs to switch. There are costs for things like data extraction, conversion, retraining of users, meaning that your leverage on renewal of these deals is not as big as it was on the initial buy. And this is a subscription service, so if you don't renew, you get nothing. So unless you're really, really ready and have prepared to move when it comes to that renewal, and that could be on an annual basis, and you've budgeted all those costs, you're not really in a very good negotiating position because the provider knows that you can't move and move to another provider for that next day. So if they put the cost up over and above what you paid for the initial deal, there's not that much that you could do about it. So we're starting to see that the renewal costs on these deals are moving up, maybe only 5, 10, sometimes 15%. But if you start to see those increases annually, that starts to mount up. Then there are also a number of hidden costs that we see emerging. And some of the research papers that we've written recently really digs into some of these hidden costs. But again, the perception of these deals is that you just pay the fee per X per month, per user per month, per transaction per month, and that is it. But when you start to read the detail of the contract and understand how the packaging is actually put together, it becomes a lot more sophisticated.
Could you give us some examples of these hidden costs?
Some examples of this would be that people assume that they might get, in a software as a service world particularly, unlimited storage. But we're starting to see that some of these providers in the CRM world or in the email providing world are actually limiting the amount of storage that you get included in the fee. And once you go over that limit, you have to pay additional premium fees, which, by the way, are actually way more expensive than you would be paying if you were buying storage in the open cloud market. They are the provider inflated prices. We're seeing charges for sandboxing, which is the test and development environment. So again, the perception is that that would be included in the fee, but a number of the providers are starting to say, well, actually, if you want that, you have to pay an additional fee, which is calculated as a percentage of your total fee. So not just for the people who are doing test and dev, but you pay 15, sometimes even 20% of all of the users' fees in order to get that facility. One of the big ones that I hear about a lot is customer service and support. Again, there is an expectation that included in this fee, you would get the ability to call if there were problems and get some of those problems solved. But when, again, you look at the standard contracts, number one, a lot of the time there is absolutely no definition of what service and support you're getting. It's only a URL link that could change at any time. But if there is a definition, you find that the service and support is really only at a very basic level. Sometimes there's no phone support at all in the basic support. You can just do email kind of support or knowledge-based searching. Or if there is phone support included, it has very, very low response time, so two-day response time, which would be inappropriate if you had a severity one incident. So in order to get something that may be more commensurate with what you were used to, you have to pay premium fees for premium support, which again could be 10, 20, even up to 37.5% we've seen of the per user per month or transaction per month fees in order to get this a service to make it equitable with what you might have been receiving historically. So there's lots of hidden costs that are emerging that would result in increasing fees over time. So with all of this, I think what I would say is, yes, the initial cost is lower, but the medium to longer term outlook, it's not so abundantly clear from a TCO perspective that this is massive cost savings. And I've even seen some software as a service offerings where the break even with on-premise has been as little as 3 years. So I think organizations really need to do that financial analysis over a multi-year period up front before they are beguiled by the initial low entry fees.
So, Alexa, how do we ensure we're getting an accurate and fair price in our cloud sourcing arrangements?
Pricing is an interesting topic, actually, because one of the assumptions about cloud pricing is that it's pay per use. I think I mentioned that in the definitional section. But the reality of the contracts today is that they're really very few of them are truly pay per use. It's not pay by the drink or pay like a utility model, as people imagine. Most of the contracts today still require you to commit to a certain volume up front. And whether you meet that volume or don't meet it, you still pay the fee. So if you bought 100 users and you actually only use 70, you still have to pay for the 100 users for the contract term. So the first point, I think, is to understand if you're getting a fair price is really to know what would happen to the price points if usage was to decrease. Make sure that you're not paying subscriberware. Number two, make sure you know what happens if your usage dramatically increases. Again, the perception is, oh, well, I'll start with 100 users, and if I get to 1,000 users, that's great, but obviously I will be getting a lower price point. Well, not obviously, because if you haven't negotiated that, you pay exactly the same for 1,000 users that you paid for 100. There is no automatic volume pricing embedded into these deals. That would be the second point. I think the third one would be understand what happens to your price on renewal. So I was alluding to this earlier, the problem of the lock-in. Make sure that you have a price cap. Make sure that the price cannot dramatically increase on renewal so that you know the bounds it's going to be within a certain index like consumer price index or a fixed percentage, say no more than 3 to 5% increase on any renewal so that you can budget for that. And then understand the fully loaded costs. We pointed out a number of the things that people often miss in this discussion and certainly in our research, but really do a full financial analysis of the fully loaded cost to make sure that you're getting a true and accurate fair price for cloud services. And then, of course, benchmark.
Alexa, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Good speaking to you.
Alexa Bona is a vice president for IT management research at Gartner. And again, you can hear my full conversation with Alexa on the May edition of Talking Technology. And you can find so much more right now in the Cloud Sourcing Special Report on Gartner.com. Thank you.